The Dallas officer who shot and killed her neighbor in his own home has been charged with manslaughter. 30-year-old Amber Geiger was arrested Sunday, 3 days after she shot and killed 26-year-old Botham Shimjohn, but authorities say she was later released after posting a $300,000 bond. The shooting happened late Thursday evening. Geiger had just finished a late shift when she mistakenly entered John's apartment, thinking it was her own. At the time, she was still in her uniform. There's been outcry over the case, with critics saying Geiger was given preferential treatment by the police. And the shooting is the latest in a flurry of recent high-profile cases where unarmed black men have died at the hands of white police officers around the country.
Botham never saw color. He never saw race. Botham wanted all of us to unite, to be together.
I don't want to say twice or for the 100th time what you've or how much you've taken from us. I think you know that. But I hope you go to God with all the guilt, all the bad things you may have done in the past. Each and every one of us may have done something that we're not supposed to do. If you truly are sorry, I know I can speak for myself. I forgive you. And I know if you go to God and ask Him, He will forgive you. And I don't think anyone could say it. Again, I'm speaking for myself, not even behalf of my family. But I love you just like anyone else. I'm not gonna say I hope you rot and die just like my brother did, but I personally want the best for you. And I wasn't gonna ever say this in front of my family or anyone, but I don't even want you to go to jail. I want the best for you. Because I know that's exactly what both of them would want you to do. And the best would be give your life to Christ. Again, I love you as a person. And I don't wish anything bad on you. I don't know if this is possible, but can I give her a hug, please? Please.
We're about to do? We're about to get real. We're about to have conversations that Christians have behind closed doors. The scary ones. The ones that make you feel uncomfortable. That's where we're going. Why? Because we're family. Ustedes son mi familia.
So this is the Brian and Janelle podcast. She's Janelle and I'm Brian. If you don't want to miss anything, all you have to do is just hit that subscribe button to get a notification whenever we drop a new episode. This is the Brian and Janelle podcast. If things get real difficult, hard conversations on the show, what I love to do is bring in someone else to take all the blame.
That's right.
So joining us live now
and
on the show.
And he got the muscles to back it up.
That's right. Pastor Leonard Tanks Jr., he is church planter and lead pastor of Reach City Church. Thanks for coming back, Pastor.
Oh, man, it's always good to be here.
So you're in the hot seat today.
Hey, man. Life is a hot seat.
Hello.
No, yeah.
Now, imagine. Before we get into the hard stuff, though, I want to be sure we're crystal clear on something, because not everybody was with us. We talked in detail about a powerful act of public forgiveness in Jesus' name mm-hmm. that took place. We even aired the audio of this happening where Brant Jean, who is the younger brother of Botham Jean, who was sitting in his apartment a little over a year ago having some ice cream, mm-hmm. and an off-duty police officer, Amber Geiger, came in, thought it was her apartment, is what she said, and shot and killed him.
Right.
And he was a Christian, loves Jesus, mm-hmm. Was playing on the worship team and everything. And so Brant got up there. Nobody knew what he was going to say. His mom didn't even know what he was going to mm-hmm. say. And he offered Christ-like forgiveness and said, he even said, you know, I hope you get saved. Mm-hmm. I want you mm-hmm. to be saved. This is good, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, but we can't like run past it. I mean, it's good that people are excited about this public act of Christian forgiveness, because forgiveness is that extreme, right? That we are called to forgive even those who would hurt us that much.
Absolutely. So forgiveness is a difficult one. I think it does display somebody who is filled with the Holy Spirit. And it doesn't mean in those moments where we struggle to forgive that we're not in love with Jesus. No, but forgiveness is difficult. Like, even when you look at Luke 17, where Jesus is telling them, listen, if your brother offended you, you go to him. If he repents, you forgive him. Well, how many times? You keep forgiving him. And the apostles' response was, give us more faith. And I think that's accurate to how we look at forgiveness as believers, because the reality is, a lot of times I'm called to forgive in areas that my heart doesn't want to forgive, or I'm called to forgive an act even though the consequences of that act I have to live with, or the affliction of that act I have to forgive, I have to live with. And oftentimes it's done at the expense, or it's done regardless of the other person actually acknowledging that they're wrong.
Yeah.
That's hard, isn't it?
That's the hardest part. I think if everybody just walked up to you like, man, I'm just so wrong, I think we'll be all right, cool, I got you. But it's the fact that oftentimes we're called to forgive people who continue to do an act against us, and it starts to feel like you're not really sorry. On the other side, we're often called to forgive people even when they're not acknowledging their guilt. Now, there's a difference between forgiveness, reconciliation, right? I'm not saying that, oh, they haven't acknowledged their guilt, we got to go and go drive to Starbucks and have coffee together. No. I'm talking, now there's another piece of that forgiveness when we have the acknowledgement of guilt, true repentance, where we do come back in reconciliation. But then the part when there is no acknowledgement, then that forgiveness is more so about me being free, me being healed, and me extending forgiveness in spite of their acknowledgement, as a display of the love of Christ.
Well, and the most dramatic example in world history was Jesus himself hanging on a cross, dying, saying, Father, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing, to people who were making fun of him.
Yeah.
While he was hanging there. I mean, that is, mm-hmm. who could do that?
Yeah. Now, we weren't reconciled to him when he said that.
No, I'm sure they kept laughing.
But it was that act of forgiveness that ultimately softened the hearts of people, often softens our own heart to lead us to Christ. And then when we acknowledge our guilt, repent, then we are reconciled to the Father.
I heard you quote the part of the Bible where Jesus told the disciples, and Peter was the one asking, in terms of you got to forgive over and over, 70 times 7. Mm-hmm. Is that where it applies in terms of when you're struggling to forgive mm-hmm. and you're on the journey? So it's not like I forgave you and it ended.
Right.
You know, how does that apply in the moments you said where it's difficult to forgive?
So one of the things that when you look at that passage, so one of the things when you look at some of the Jewish Talmuds, right, I always tell people, when you look at that, when Peter actually says seven times, he's actually already extending an extra level of grace per their Talmud, because I believe it's six times. Six times was the required forgiveness. After that, you don't have to forgive anymore. So when Peter goes and he says seven, he's like, oh yeah, look, I'm forgiving more than I'm actually required. And then Jesus calls him to a deeper level, like, oh yeah, I got you, Peter. That's good. No, let's go 7 times seven. And in other words, what Jesus is saying is, when you think you've done enough forgiving, then extend yourself to forgive even more. And that's the hard spots. That's when it's like, I'm through. Like, this person has done me wrong this many times, and Jesus says, forgive them again. Again, hear me. I am not talking that I have to now go have coffee at Starbucks with this person. I need to invite them over to my house and have dinner. That's not what we're talking about. But what I'm simply saying is, I'm going to display that act of love, that witness of Christ and keep forgiving you, even when it's difficult.
What do you say to the Christian who makes it sound easy? Like the person who goes, well, oh, I'm sorry to hear that your brother was murdered, but just forgive him. It's not easy, is it?
No. So here's the thing. A lot of times we sit in seats, right? And I don't know what your seat is, but we sit in seats. And where we sit at in our seat allows us to minimize the pain and the hurt of other people. So if I never witness tragedy, or I've never witnessed oppression, or I've never witnessed injustice, or I've never witnessed the loss of a child or the loss of a parent, then it's easy to just blatant murder, right? Then it's easy for me to look at you and say, well, as a Christian, you just have to forgive them. Well, wait a minute, you don't live with this trauma.
Yeah.
So it's easy for you to tell me what to do, but it's harder when you actually have to walk it out. There's a wrestling that happens. In some instances you have, like, put it like this. His brother didn't. I don't think his brother went up there in an act of impulse.
No.
And just forgave her.
Right.
I believe he wrestled through that before. I think he had to wrestle through that. Like, what is the greatest display that I can show right now to this woman? And he chose forgiveness. But I don't think it was easy. You know it wasn't easy because he said, I thought I would never say this in front of my family or publicly. Why? Because the moment I do that, what has happened to him will become the narrative. He has been just torn down by those who feel like he shouldn't have forgave. And so when you put yourself out there to forgive, you become a target for ridicule. And so it's hard.
But see, some people think that, I don't know, as hard as this forgiveness thing is, some people think they're sinning if it's hard. Like we tell ourselves it's supposed to be easy.
No.
So how do you begin the journey of forgiveness and to end up where Brant Jean was in that courtroom?
Right. So for me personally, one, when you look back at that Luke 17 passage, the apostles who were walking with the Lord, you know, they were like, yo, give us more faith. That right there lets us know, like, this isn't an easy thing. Like, they're asking for more faith in order to forgive the way that Jesus is called. You got to help us, Jesus, because we don't want to do that. Like, you tripping. Like, and that's how we look at it. Man, Jesus, you tripping. And so for me, when I grew up, when I first came to faith and I began to learn about forgiveness, I had these moments. And I'm not going to lie, I had these moments where I started to puff my chest out because I came into some very hard situations that required me in that moment to forgive. Quick example, I'm at the RTA stop. I'm working. I got my bag on the platform. A train comes by. I'm working because I'm flagging on the tracks for RTA. A train comes by. I turn around. My briefcase is gone. Now, in this briefcase, by the way, was like I had just got my Tony Evans theology book. I was like, you know, I was all pumped. You know what I'm saying? Well, like no money or nothing in there. Right? The train goes by. I look. I said, man, my book bag's gone. I mean, my briefcase is gone. So I radio to the RTA. I say, hey, listen, somebody on that train just took my stuff. And they're like, all right, cool. We're going to the 150th station. Boom, boom, boom. We'll try to stall or whatever the case may be. So they send another train. I hop on that train real quick, and we go down to the 150. Now I'm hot. I am hot. I'm only like a for money and Christian. So I still remember how to throw them things. You know what I'm saying? So I get off and I'm hot, but I don't know where this rapid station is at on 150. So I end up walking the wrong way. Then I turn around and I walk the other way because I'm like, okay, this rapid station can't be that far. So I'm walking the other way, but the whole time I was walking, God had began to work on me. And my anger and what I really wanted to do when I got to the station.
Made you go the wrong way.
Sure enough, I get to the station and I see this guy. My briefcase is standing right next to him. And I'm literally sitting there processing through. Man, what am I about to do?
Because you want to hit him.
Yeah. And my flesh still wanted to because I went behind to come through, not in front. Right. And as I'm coming up behind, he's just dead to rights. And so I'm just like, what I'm about to do. And in that moment, God was like, yo, just forgive this brother. And so when I walk up to him, I just look at him. He look at me. I'm like, man, that's my briefcase, man. He's like, brother, listen, man, I'm sorry. He was like, man, it's a lick. He's like, well, what would you do if you saw a briefcase sitting on the thing and you could just get it? He's like,
when you say it's a lick, you mean it's like easy.
Yeah, man, it's easy. Like, okay. Like you would have did the same thing. And I'm sitting there like, nah, I feel you. Like 4 months ago, 5 months ago, I probably would have did it too. That led to an entire conversation about Christ. It led to him for 2 weeks riding that rapid station train back to my station. And I'm actually helping him fill out his resumes because he was actually looking for jobs. Now, I tell that story, and I used to boast in that story. And anytime anybody talked about forgiveness, I'm like, yeah, man, I remember this happened and this happened. It's a whole bunch of other stories like that that happened early on in my Christian walk. What I didn't understand was that, wait a minute, I don't think I really ever truly forgave them. It just kept sounding good to say I forgave them. It sounded good to be like, no, I'm going to forgive you. It sounded like that's the macho Christian thing. He's real mature.
It's like a Christian punch of sorts.
And now I'm learning that, wait a minute, no, that's not true. Like, no, I still had issues with that brother. Some of these people I really didn't forgive. And I learned that I have to stop making it and talking about forgiveness as if it was so easy and start embracing the fact that the tension that we live in as Christians to be forgiving while seeking justice, while being angry, is a very real thing that we have to learn to navigate with. And it pulls us, no different than our flesh pulls us away from our spirit, and our spirit is pulling us away from the flesh in Galatians 5. That tension exists in every area of life where Christ is calling us to something that is countercultural.
And it sounds like the viral video makes forgiveness look like a moment. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you're saying even one act of forgiveness can be a journey, and many times it is.
Mm-hmm. No, it is. I think it's a process. A process, yes.
But as a whole, you would say you loved the video in and of itself in the idea of Christ-like forgiveness.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the video, and it's just this is God's honest truth, man. I'm sitting in I'm in Vegas, and the video had came to my phone because I was getting hit up with this video, and I'm like, what's going on? I'm like, man, I'm not looking. I'm in Vegas. I'm chilling. So I finally get up and move, and I'm like, all right, let me see what all these text messages is about. And I click the video, and I'm watching it, and the guy kind of, his brother, Jen, he kind of smacks in the video, and my wife is behind me ironing, and she like, what, you mad? And I'm like, huh? What are you talking about? She was like, I thought you smacked. I'm like, no, that ain't me.
That's well, for those who don't know, he went... Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. My wife thought I was watching it doing like, and I'm like, and she like, what, you mad? And I was like, no, I ain't mad. I was like, this is actually really good, you know? And I watched it and I was just, I was amazed because I said, man, that's literally in my spirit. I was like, yeah, right. A couple years maybe. If you got 20 years, maybe, if you actually show some remorse and repentance, maybe. But I'm just like, but then I just was sitting there like, yo, this is beautiful. And I instantly said, this is going to break through in a lot of people's lives that are watching this video. This witness is going to be great. And I'm sure, though, as you talked about it, when I took to social media, I seen a different response.
And that's where I want to go next. But I want to be sure we're clear with this, that it was a beautiful picture of the gospel.
It was amazing.
And it touched your soul. And yet, I saw a lot of people dissatisfied. Mm-hmm. And these people are people who profess Christ.
Absolutely.
So how could someone watch a guy forgive his brother's murderer and be dissatisfied? We'll have to figure that out.
If you truly are sorry, I'm not gonna say I hope you rot and die just like my brother did, but I personally want the best for you. I hope you go to God and ask Him. He will forgive you.
Brian and Janelle here, and we're so glad to have Pastor Tanks in studio with us. Pastor Tanks is a lead pastor and church planter of Reach City Church in the Huff neighborhood of Cleveland. Go check it out. What's the website again if people want to check it out?
www.reachchurchcle.com.
Or come to us. We'll get you there.
Yep. Or go to my Facebook, Leonard Jr. Tanks.
So now, if you're just tuning in, we've just spent the last like 20 minutes talking about a powerful example that almost everybody has seen by now on social media. Even the news media couldn't resist sharing the story of a Christian young man, Brant Jean, whose older brother, Botham, was murdered a little over a year ago by an off-duty police officer in his apartment. And he not only forgave her, the murderer, but hugged her in the courtroom.
Yeah.
I mean, dramatic. And he even said he wants her to know Christ
right.
and turn his life over to Jesus. It's a powerful thing. Mm-hmm. And so I mentioned before how when you say something like, oh, I'm sorry, but, or when you go, that's a great point, but you usually erase the first things.
Right.
And we don't want to do that.
No.
So what we want to do is we want to say, that was a powerful example of God's grace. Mm-hmm. And some people are dissatisfied. Okay. I saw a lot of people on social media, and I'm going to say many of them African-American.
Absolutely.
Were dissatisfied.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
So there's various reasons that I saw. One, so in one camp, you have a camp that is satisfied or embraces him forgiving, but are exhausted at the fact that it is always the oppressed who has to forgive their oppressor. And so they're exhausted by it. It's always the black people who have to be the bigger person and say we forgive. Whenever we talk, especially, and I'm talking in Christian circles right now. We're not going to talk about the broader scale of the world. But in Christian circles, it's a lot of white, not individuals, but as an entity, white evangelicalism who says, listen, we got to move on from that. That happened. Let's move past it, right? And we're always being told as the ones who are on the receiving side of oppression and social injustices and things like that. And it is to, hey man, let's just forgive us, right? And so there's that camp, and they're like, we're just tired of, like, we appreciate that he forgave, but why do we always have to be the one to forgive? And that's one side, and I agree. There's another side that's upset about it just for the simple fact that they're like, man, why did he forgive her? And we know that there was a clear sign of injustice. So they're saying, listen, I understand forgiveness, but man, there's an injustice that just occurred here. And instead of talking about the fact that, listen, man, this white woman walked into a black man's home, shot him while he was eating ice cream and killed him. And she just got 10 years and potentially maybe 5, right? But she just got 10 years. Right. Where if we're being honest and we're looking at everything collectively as a whole and we're being honest, you reverse that and the death penalty is on the table, or 25 to life. Right. Is on the table. If a black man walks into a white woman's home while she's eating ice cream and shoots her dead and says, I thought I was in my apartment. It's not going to fly like that. Right. Then they're like, listen, there's clear impartiality in the justice system. And this is wrong. Why are we not talking about that? And then the other camp that I've witnessed, by the way, I agree with that as well. On the other camp that I witnessed said something that I thought is really good. They said, I appreciate him forgiving her. However, I'm upset that all across my timeline, white evangelicals are sharing this, the greatest act of forgiveness. All around white evangelical churches this Sunday, this was the conversation. This beautiful thing of forgiveness. But you guys never talked about the injustices during the trial when it was happening. You didn't share the videos and all of the news articles about this crime as it's been going on for the last year. But now when we get to a place of forgiveness, that's the message you guys want to continue to now put out on your page. But you never put out on your page the other side of the story. And so there is some upsetness there. And I agree with that as well.
And now I can hear basically probably three different types of responses. Somebody's out there right now going, huh, I never thought of it like that. Somebody else is going, preach, tanks. Yes. Say it again in case somebody missed it. And somebody else is like maybe mad, upset, going, how dare you minimize an act of forgiveness by bringing all this up again? Why do we got to talk about all this? And here's my deal. You love Jesus. I love Jesus. We're all in the family of God. And this is a hard conversation, but we are going to do a disservice to the Christian community in Northeast Ohio, Western Pennsylvania, if we can't learn how to listen to each other.
Absolutely.
Right.
Because what I saw in this, I told you this privately. I was like, we got to be careful here. I don't want to make it sound like Pastor Tanks or Brian or Janelle doesn't think he did a good thing by asking for or saying he forgives her and giving her a hug. None of us think that was a bad thing. Mm-mm. And if we go on the air and talk about something complicated here, people are going to think we're saying that was bad. No, we're not saying that at all. We're taking that and we're saying it is what it is. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's powerful. It's impactful. We're going to take it. We're going to pick it up and we're going to set it aside and talk about how somebody could see that and still feel exhausted or frustrated and would use then words. I know the minute you start saying, oh, black Christians this, white Christians that, somebody's already mad at you.
Absolutely. It's just the world we live in.
But we got to be able to sit down and talk about this in a way where I can be a white evangelical and go, okay, that might like be like fingernails on a chalkboard for me. Mm-hmm. But I love you because you love Jesus and we're brothers in Christ, and I gotta at least hear you out.
Right. And it's part of being family. I mean, we have to all be heard at all parts of God's people. And so my question to you is, for those listening who are thinking, well, why? I mean, we know that it was unjust and we know that it was a problem and it was sinful. Why do I need to share that in order to be okay in terms of sharing the grace and the forgiveness and the hug? Why does the other one need to be shared? What's the urgency?
So, well, there's a generic answer to that, and then there's a ethnic answer to that. I think in the generic way to answer that is because we always have to tell the full story, right? It's no different than us going out and telling people, listen, you can't go out there and just keep telling people about the fact that Jesus came and saved them, but you never tell them that they needed saving because they were on their way to hell. I never forget my wife was sharing with me just somebody that she was speaking to about the gospel. And this person was so encouraged by my wife because they literally said to my wife, listen, anybody ever told me about the bad news of the gospel?
They used that phrase?
They used that phrase. And so what happened was that person ended up going telling everybody, like, hold on, wait a minute. I know Jesus. Do you know why he died? Do you know where we were on our way to? Do you understand that there's a bad side? There's a positive and a negative, right? No different than when we're talking about atonement. One of our launch team people had to deal with that in their theology. What's the negative sides of atonement? They're like, what was negative about it? Well, somebody had to die on our behalf, right? There's always positives, but there's always a negative as well. And to give the full story, we have to talk about both of them. And it plays into the area of empathy. And what I mean by that is, if all I want to do is talk about the fact that she was forgiven, but then I choose to be silent on the fact that, man, there was some impartiality in this justice system. We got to talk about the fact that, well, how in the world did she only get 10 years in the first place, right? Things like that. Then what we're saying, what I believe we're saying is, that doesn't really concern me. Only thing that concerns me is that she's forgiven. And the reason that's a bigger problem from an ethnic standpoint is because what it perpetuates unintentionally is this notion that when all across the world white evangelicals are sharing a forgiveness video, they're not talking about the unjust sentencing.
Or the injustice that happened in the act itself.
Or the
injustice that happened afterward when the witness was murdered over the weekend.
The witness is murdered and everything that his mom talked about. Like, listen, there was this corruption throughout the entire process has been clear and evident. And nobody's been taught. It ain't like it's been silent about these things. We ain't get a lot of shares about this, right? Mm-hmm. Well, what you're saying is it's the whole notion that it goes deeper than what the video shows. It's a black man forgiving a white woman, which is the narrative of white evangelicals. Just forgive us, right? We don't want to talk about slavery. We don't want to talk about the injustice in the prison systems. We don't want to talk about redlining. We don't want to talk about our power positions. We just want you to forgive us. And here's a video to give you an example of how a black man can forgive a white woman. And that's just what we don't want to talk about anything else other than just forgive us, coddle us, right? Yeah. Listen, hear me out, and I'm saying this, and I love everybody.
Yeah, don't change the channel. We love you.
I love you. There is a book written by a white woman, not me. It's written by a white woman, and I first learned of this book by Brian Laritz, and it's called White Fragility. If you haven't got that book, none of these words are my words. Mm-hmm. If you have not got that book, you should get it, because it's a white woman who talks about the experiences and the experiments that she conducts in workplaces around ethnic and racial issues. And she tells a story that of white fragility is that the moment it gets uncomfortable, that what white America has the tendency to unintentionally or intentionally do is pull the narrative back to a coddle or a comfort of themselves. And this is the example she gives. She said, I'm doing this talk on race. And they take a test, and there's this white woman whose result says that she's insensitive to black issues, right? This white woman gets upset with the results because it made her seem like she was bad. And she wasn't bad. It was just these are what the results. This is the reality, right? So she goes back to her desk. Now, the rest of the co-workers are having a discussion, white and black, about the effects on the black people in the workplace by some of the actions of the empowered, right? In that moment, the white people leave, go to this lady's desk, comes back to the instructor, who's a white woman, and says, wait, she is really upset at her desk about what happened. And made it feel like you made her seem like she was wrong, she was bad, she didn't like black people, and she's really upset because that's not true about herself. And she's so upset that we believe she's about to have a heart attack. And they were serious. In that moment, the entire narrative of the conversation moved from how do we deal with these issues of race and segregation and injustice in the workplace and the negative effect it has on your black coworkers to everybody going now to comfort and coddle this white lady who was upset because her response made her look a certain way. The narrative shift, just like that. And a lot of times when we start talking about race issues, right, what happens is that's what happens. And so it's all of these black people are upset about the fact that they're posting videos about forgiveness, but nobody wants to talk about the unjust sentences and all of the case. The response from white evangelical Christians was to make black Christians feel like, oh, you think forgiveness is bad? Made them feel like less of Christians because they wanted to talk about the other side. And so what happens in that moment? Well, I'm a Christian. I love the Lord. And so now we have to shift the narrative of anger and righteous anger and now say, well, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend. You get what I'm saying? The narrative constantly has to change. We have to fight to stop doing that because what happens is fatigue sets in.
Yeah.
Fatigue sets in the black community.
Yeah.
And what happens is the conversations that we need to be having, these roundtable talks that we need to be having as brothers and sisters, we may disagree. We may walk away and not agree with each other at all, but we need to still be able to talk and have a conversation.
To each other.
But when we constantly have to deal with, as her words, white woman's words, not my words, white fragility, right? Then what happens is exhaustion sets in. Mm-hmm. And when that exhaustion sets in, I don't want to talk about it no more. Because the moment I talk about it, I'm made to look like I'm the bad guy.
Yeah.
I'm the guy who don't love. I'm the guy who doesn't want to move past what happened. And so to protect my image, I'm just going to not talk about it. That's a power move by the white evangelical and the white community that needs to be addressed and stopped.
I'm going to ask you to pause here again. That's Pastor Leonard Tanks Jr. He is church planter of Reach City Church in the Huff neighborhood of Cleveland. And I'm so glad to be with you. I'm Brian, along with me, Janelle. And maybe you're a white evangelical like me, and a lot of what he just said made you real uncomfortable. Don't go anywhere. We like to have hard conversations here because what unites us is the blood of Christ. And sometimes talking about perceived injustice or injustice itself on any side of a discussion when it has to do with race can be very difficult. But don't go anywhere. Be patient.
And I wasn't gonna ever say this in front of my family or anyone, but I don't even want you to go to jail. I want the best for you because I know that's exactly what both of them would want you to do. And the best would be give your life to Christ.
As we continue talking about why many followers of Jesus who profess Christ were excited about Brant Jean's public forgiveness in a courtroom of former police officer Amber Geiger, who murdered her brother in his apartment. Why, that was beautiful, but also there's much more to talk about in terms of injustice. Thank you for coming in and talking about a hard topic today. Many people during Share 2019 mentioned they appreciate that we go to hard places, mm-hmm. and this is one of the harder places. You want to clear out a room, bring up race issues among Christians.
Yeah.
And I don't want you to leave. I want you to stay. We love you, whoever you are, whether you're excited about what Pastor Tanks has shared so far or whether you're upset about it. Let's talk, okay? Because Jesus prayed for our unity.
Mm-hmm. And I love some of the texts coming in. Someone says, a white evangelical 52-year-old woman here. Thank you, Pastor Tanks. I will look for the book and more conversations. And a lot of this stuff is new to some people. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to kind of talk about that because a lot of the people who are listening love the Lord. They love people. But their sphere of information and people may not include what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, so they may have seen the video and been excited about it and shared it and not honestly not have known about the injustices we're talking about, which we know about, mm-hmm. but we can take for granted that they don't. So what are your word for that?
And before we get there, just in case you're just tuning in, remember we're talking about, and we have been for quite a while now, the murder of Botham Jean in his apartment in Dallas. An off-duty police officer, Amber Geiger, shot him a little over a year ago. And just last week, the brother of this young man publicly forgave at sentencing this woman for murdering her brother. And a lot of people shared it as a powerful act of forgiveness. And so Janelle's asking ultimately, Pastor, the idea that like there is somebody who could legitimately not know there were injustices tied to this.
Yeah, and so as we talk about the one side of it, we also have to address to the oppressed community, to those who are hurting, those who are marginalized, as believers. I'm speaking to the believers. If you're not a believer and you're listening, let's talk about Jesus. But to the believers who confess and profess to know Christ, love assumes all things. So we have to be careful that we do not negatively assume and place things on people. In other words, what I'm saying is we have to give the benefit of the doubt that some people really, because of their context, aren't on their radar, right? There's a lot of things about me, if we take it down to a more easier subject, as a dad, right? All across the world, single moms or stay-at-home moms, I like to say work-at-home moms, are like, listen, you don't understand what we go through and how hard it is. And there's an ignorance on some part where it's like, what you mean? You at home with the kids all day. Like why you got time to do a bunch of stuff? Because there's an ignorance. And we don't understand what these mothers are going through, the stresses that they go through. And I'm not a bad person because I don't understand.
Yeah.
I'm not stay at home now. No,
and you don't know what you don't know. There are things that you would learn if you knew that you didn't know.
Right.
Some people just don't even realize there's things
exactly.
out there.
Exactly. Well, and that's... Oh,
but put more specifically, what you're saying is, if you're an African-American and you're mad at a white friend for sharing that post, it's not that they said, I know about injustices, I don't care about them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All I care about is forgiveness here. I don't know anyone who follows Jesus who would do something like that.
Right. And so you have to... What's better is not to assume, you're a racist, you don't care. But it's more so to begin to have because you may come out of that conversation and be like, okay, no, you're just a racist, you don't care. But it's to go into that conversation and say, can I talk to you about something? I don't know if you were aware of this, but it bothers me because I struggled with this. I was like, man, did we just give white America a pass again? And I struggled with that. I did. I had to wrestle through that as I looked at my timeline like, I didn't even know I followed you. I didn't know I followed. All of a sudden, it's like my timeline is just flooded with, and I'm like, whoa, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Right? And then it's split because it's white America sharing the video and it's my black friends. It's like, hello. And so I think that we have to have these conversations because, again, everybody's context breeds different focal points. And some things just don't jump out to me because it's not my context. And so what we have to do is sit down and say, can I talk to you? Can I explain to you what the sharing of that video did? Were you aware of the entirety of the story? Did you know that you followed this actual case all the way through and learn from my brother and my sister on either side of exactly what are they feeling and why they're feeling? And then give my point of view as a black man and give your point of view as a white male and white female, because the Bible tells us in all things to get understanding.
If we're going to walk together as brothers and sisters, we're going to spend eternity together as brothers and sisters, then we have to be willing on this side of eternity to say, can I share with you my perspective without you getting upset, without you making me feel like I'm evil and hate Jesus and hate white people and hate black people?
And unfortunately, as a black man, that's the side that I have to take. I'm typically just, you know, you get shut out of platforms. Right. Whenever you're vocal about social issues and race issues, man, you don't get invited to the table.
Yeah.
Right. You find yourself out on the outside unless you become someone who learns to navigate the tension well or get a popular name to bring you in. But you typically find yourself as, man, if I talk about this again, man, I'm not going to get donors. Hey, if I talk about this again, man, nobody's going to want to be a part of the church plan. Hey, man, if I talk about this again, I'm not going to get invited to that banquet, that dinner, right? I'm going to be shut out. And as a black person, that's often how we feel on these issues. And so that's when I said that race fatigue kicks in. And it's what led Martin Luther King to say, listen, I integrated my people into a burning house.
You talked about the exhaustion from the disenfranchised. And we're talking knowing that God's people are family.
Yes.
So I like that you said, give the benefit of the doubt. That's part of Christian love. But then what's the call for the white evangelical in terms of owning part of the relationship and maybe reaching out to your friends of color and trying to, is there a call for that?
It's exhausting as the black man to constantly have to explain, to constantly have to educate, to constantly have to be the one sitting at the table. And so help us understand. You become, because you run the risk of being, you know, quote unquote, the token. Right.
I know what you're saying. It's you're saying the token black person that has to speak for all black people. Yeah. But at this, I mean, I'm a white evangelical. And so I can go, man, I feel bad that you get exhausted by having to speak for black people all the time. But I'm ignorant and I need help. Mm-hmm. So what do you want me to do?
So I think we live in a culture where we can self-educate. We live in a culture where information is readily available to us with the click of a enter button on your phone. I think sometimes going into the conversation, doing some research, reading certain books and learning for yourself, learning why you can't say certain things about hairstyles, learning why certain words aren't appropriate. I just think it's exhausting for the black person to always have to be the one to have to be like, hey, can I talk to you about what just happened and explain to you, versus part of being in a relationship. You know, if my wife always has to be the one, be like, can I tell you why you did that wrong? Can I help you understand this? Versus that can be exhausting. But I know what my wife appreciates when I say, babe, I've been paying attention. I've been studying. I've been learning. I've been understanding your point of view. And I want to come to you and let you know that I realize that I've been insensitive to your plight as a black mom. You know, I think it just speaks more volume to the relationship when I feel like, okay, hey, you've sought out understanding on your own instead of me always having to be the one always talking about these issues, because it makes me the bad guy. Unintentionally or intentionally, it makes me the bad guy. It makes me always the one that has to, oh, he's talking about race again. Well, you asked me. I got to talk about it because I'm the only one at the table that has this side of the conversation. And so I do think that part of the relationship is, yes, me as a brother going to you and saying, let me help you understand, but also you as my brother and my sister coming and seeking understanding on your own and educating yourself. I'm about to post something, because I have to, as a black man who is a pastor in a predominantly white denomination, right? As a black man who is coming on Moody to talk about race issues, understanding a predominantly white audience, I literally have to think my whole ride over here. All right, what is appropriate? What should I not say? How do I say it? I have to constantly be conscious of what I say, because I understand that I'm a minority in a dominant culture of white America.
And, right? And you don't want to hurt or offend white people.
And that's not my intent. So I have to always be conscious and understand, wait, how would this make this person feel? But what we're asking as a black community, as brothers and sisters, is be as conscious when you post. Be as conscious when you share. Understanding that I have black friends who are going to see this, right? And how would that make them feel if I post this?
Yeah, we do have to think about those things, and I'm glad you brought it up. But, you know, there's, I think, a deeper theological issue here that I admit I struggle with that has to be addressed in the midst of it. Mm-hmm. It's that I love grace, and if I lean too much towards grace, I begin to ignore justice. Mm-hmm. And you think about that tension, right, in Micah 6:8. To do justice and love mercy. Mm-hmm. And in that one sentence is tension. Mm-hmm. And Brant Jean loves mercy. But we're also called to do justice. And I think it's important to bring this up, that in the gospel itself is the issue of injustice.
Yeah.
How is injustice important why is it essential to understanding the gospel?
Because it acknowledges that, man, I'm wrong. And I don't even deserve this amazing act of forgiveness. Why? Because I have wronged a just God. I have wronged somebody who has done nothing but love me. And really, if we're looking at it from any cultural standpoint, we'd be like, yo, that's an injustice. Like, you forgave them, and after everything that they did, we have to acknowledge that, one, because it makes forgiveness that much more beautiful, to recognize that, yo, it's not forgive the person that always is for understanding and deserving of it. It's recognizing that, wait, there's an injustice done against me, but the love of my Father is to extend forgiveness to you despite it. That's the tension point. And that's a tension that doesn't sit well. We don't love it. We don't enjoy it. But it's a tension point. It's the tension point where I embrace my brother for forgiving Amber, right? But I am outraged by the fact that there was clear corruption throughout the case. I love that he forgave her, but I'm outraged and demanding that we address these issues. We gotta address the fact that black men in America get, for the same crime as white men in America, it is 19%, almost 20%. The sentence is almost 20% higher for the same crime from black man to white man. We gotta address that. We need to be outraged as a community about that. While at the same time, we need to be like, wait, but I do want people to know the Lord. And we have to recognize and understand that there's two sides to every story. I say this really quick. In my testimony, I didn't go to jail. I was guilty. I always tell people I was guilty. I should have went to jail.
You should have gone to jail.
Yeah, I should have been in jail. Only reason I'm not in jail is because the evidence got damaged in police property. And so everybody hears my story and they celebrate the grace of God and the forgiveness on my life. Thank you. Yes. But there's another party who can sit on the sideline and say, wait a minute, we didn't get justice for what he did to us. There's another side.
Yeah,
and
there is.
And when we're talking about forgiveness, we have to acknowledge that there's another side. There's another party who's going to walk away feeling like justice wasn't served. Botham's mom, she embraced the forgiveness, but she still lost a son.
Yeah.
And she cried out about injustice.
Yeah.
And see, this is the piece I think a lot of Christians skate over. It's that we don't like to talk about justice. It sounds in a modern context like a dirty word or mm-hmm. something. But there is justice in the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
God didn't just forgive you your sin and move on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There was a price to pay. There's
and
consequence for sin. And it
just
was paid.
Wasn't paid by you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Jesus
justice
actually took that consequence.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And justice and grace meets at the cross. That's mm-hmm. the beauty of the cross. You can't talk about grace without, like you said, talking about justice, because the cross says, yeah, it's just because I paid for it. Somebody mm-hmm. did.
And so those two have to be interconnected, and I think they have to be in balance in the midst of the tension.
Yeah.
Because if you're just talking about justice, you're not going to tell somebody about grace and forgiveness. And if you're just talking about grace
right.
and forgiveness, they're not going to believe they have a just God.
Right.
As we're talking about his mom, Allison Jean, I love that she reminded us that forgiveness, because I think some of us treat forgiveness like it's a period.
Mm.
And it should be, but in this context, she's like, there's work to be done.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what you were alluding to. And maybe we'll get into that on Brian and Janelle over time. But did you see the video and what were your reactions to her
No,
words?
I appreciated it. And I love what Brian said at the top of the hour where he said, listen, we didn't make that go viral.
Yeah.
Right? That's an imbalance then. And so I leave with these words, man. A friend of mine posted this on Facebook, and I thought it was beautiful. He said, if you're outraged by the injustice of the case that you won't share the video of forgiveness, there's a problem. If you're sharing the video of forgiveness, but you're not outraged by the injustice of the case, there's a problem, right?
Ooh, well said.
We got to talk about this.
Well said, because even after all this was over, many people may have missed this. But there was one witness, the key witness that ended up causing the murderer to be convicted mm-hmm. was the guy who lived across the apartment
mm-hmm.
from Botham Jean. Remember, they all lived one floor above a police officer. So this is not some like crime-ridden mm-mm. public housing project or something. This is where a police officer lived.
Right.
He was murdered. The
dead.
Star witness was shot dead over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about injustice. He did the right thing and was killed. I mean, what
right?
else?
Right.
I guess it could be random, but that would be one of the greatest coincidences in world history.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But hey, I hate to say it, we got to run. What was the name of the book again? People keep asking that you recommended.
White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo. RobinDiAngelo. Robin DiAngelo.
Hey, hold up. Where are you going? You know you like your time with us. You want more. So look down, hit that button right there, subscribe, and you'll get updated episodes, and then you can hang some more.
And guess what? You can help us. How? A 5-star rating. Not 4, 3, 2, 1. No, 5.
You can also hang with us live weekday 6 to 9 a.m. Interact with us, talk with us. Download the Moody Radio app.
Or at brianandjanelle.org.
And we don't put all this together all by ourselves. There's some great people behind all this production. We want to thank Ron Eastwood, Kelly Ryder, Paul Carter, Doug Hainer, and our awesome and fearless leader, Josue Villa.
And finally, this podcast is a production of Moody Radio in Cleveland, the ministry of Moody Bible Institute.
Well, Brian, that's a wrap.
Yep.